Hey, all right, Reg, are we ready to go? Let's do a little podcasting, huh? All right, yes, as we discussed last week, no music until we figure out what to do, all right? So we're going to keep going unplugged and naked.
Oh!
All right, makes your job a lot easier. So thank all the music copyright companies out there for making your job easier. Now you just have one button to press. It makes my life harder because I'm used to having that music behind me when I do the intro live, and it's a little odd. I can get through it. Don't get me wrong. It's not like climbing Mount Everest, but I have to concentrate more. When that music started playing, I mean, I've been doing that same intro for pretty much I can't even remember, but probably since the beginning, and so that is ingrained in my head. I don't even think about that, really. And so, you know, but I'll get through it. Don't worry. Oh, first world problem, right? Okay, well, get ready. You just have to hit that record button when I say 3, 2, 1 at this point. So lucky, easy you. Lucky you. I'm the one that has to work now. And believe me, the wages aren't worth it. All right, are you ready? Good. So am I. Let's do it. Star, smile strong. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Where else would we be? Of course, it's always important for you to listen, but I'd also appreciate if you get out there and tell your friends and family or anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. That loyalty and that devotion that you have shown this podcast, it is much, much, much appreciated. Of course, if you like what you hear, whether you've been around since we started in May of 2016 or just the last couple of weeks or couple of months, whatever, if you want to hear some older podcasts to find out where we've been so you know where we're going, go to WGNradio.com, go to the prompt for this podcast, and then hit the prompt for podcasts in general, and then hit the prompt for this one specifically, and there you will find podcast after podcast. Just scroll down and load more. Scroll down and load more. We've got podcasts in there dating back several years. We've been on since 2016. They don't go that far back, but they go far back enough where you can get a taste of what we've been doing here for the last almost decade now, and almost 500 episodes. Yeah, because this is episode 483. Wow, that's a lot of podcasts. So, have you noticed anything different for the second week in a row? Yes. So, last week, for you close listeners, you may have noticed that the intro music to the podcast is not there anymore. No, it's not that Reggie, the producer, forgot to hit the button, both at the beginning or the end. It's that somebody hit the button on us. Namely, I'm not sure if it's streaming services or whoever it is. I was just made aware that there were some issues with using music that has not either been cleared or we don't have the rights to use. You know, I've been using that opening music, the intro, the instrumental that we sort of pieced together from Elton John's The Bitch Is Back, literally since day one. And as well as the outro music, which is another Elton John song called The Captain and the Kid, just an instrumental from that. And obviously the tie-in is that, hey, this is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and so I had Elton John music at the beginning and at the end, and I thought it was a nice little tie-in. But apparently, now that podcasts are a big revenue generator for people, I mean, when we started this thing, in 2016, podcasts were still somewhat in their infancy, but you know, almost 10 years later now, it's big business, and so those people that hold music rights, They want a part of that revenue. They are revenue generating. And so if you're using something of theirs, they want some revenue. There used to be a system or a process in place where you could use music of any kind and the rights people were taken care of and everything was fine. But ever since the streaming world happened, a lot of the music business has changed. A lot of the royalty structures have changed. And so apparently now that has crept into the podcast world. So we'll have to see. Hopefully we can use some music. I would like to have some music as a production element just to change things up and add a little excitement. That opening, especially as well as the outro, I do those intros and those outros live. Those aren't on tape. Those aren't just automatically used and dumped in and edited in. I do every one of those live for the upcoming podcast. And so I enjoyed having that music behind me because it was a nice little inspiration for me. It, fast-paced music at the beginning to get the juices flowing and get the instrument moving. I tried to weave around the music so some of the music could come through. Obviously the tie-in was Elton John music. I used the Bitches Back as a subtle kind of hint to say, well, I am back again. Not that I'm a bitch, but But anyway, so I was trying to be a little creative on that end. But once again, the money people get involved. And the first things to crash is creativity. So I guess there's some music that might be okay to use in terms of rights. It might be, public domain or something like that. But at the same time, if it's kind of generic music, then I don't really know if it matches or makes sense, at least not in my mind. I like to do kind of little subtle, cool things, and just to have some generic music in the background to me is just kind of blasé and kind of ordinary. So I might just be going at it like I've been doing now the last 2 weeks with no music, just unplugged and naked, if you will. So anyway, if you're wondering where the music was, that's where it is, and I'm not sure if it comes back. But this part of the podcast, the talking, the content, the compelling content, that won't change. That they can't claim rights on because it's coming out of this mouth. So rest assured, the beginning and the end of the podcast may sound a little different for a while, but you'll get used to it. But as long as the compelling content in the middle of those is still there, then you're still in good shape. And the reasons that you listen to the Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic will still be intact. Sans a little music at the beginning and the end. In reality, I think the outro was about 42 seconds. The intro took about a minute and a half, so we're kind of talking like, 2 minutes or so out of more an hour. So that's not so bad to do, so bad to get used to living without, right? Okay. Well, now let me get to that compelling content I've been bragging about. So, for here in episode 483, and I have to say, we are getting to a No, is it? No, wait a minute. Hey, Reg, did you? Are we in? Are we doing 483 right now? Is that you, Reggie, saying yes or no? Can we use that sound? Yeah, yeah. No, this is episode 483. So this is there's 18. This counting this one, we have 18 podcasts to go until 500. Wow, big milestone. And so I guess I could go to a calendar and count the weeks from now until the end of the year. I would assume, let's face it, this is the last week of August. So next week will be September. So we've got September, October, November, and December. If I've got 17 podcasts to get to 500, 4 times 4 is 16. So I would assume that perhaps the first week of January is will be number 500. But I don't know. I haven't gotten the calendar out and counted it. And you know what? I'm not going to. Let's just see where it lands. I'm going to throw caution to the wind. We'll all just figure out. I mean, you can go to the calendar if you want to ruin it. But I'm just going to continue to do podcasts and see where it lands. But it's going to be around the end of the year or the beginning of 2026. But we're getting close to that big 500 milestone. So if you've been here for any amount of time, unless this is your first podcast that you've been listening to, whether you've been here since day one in May of 2016, or you've just been here for the last, what does the clock on the wall say? The last 10 minutes. Thank you for being aboard. We appreciate your loyalty, whether it's been 10 years or 10 minutes. So now let's get to that compelling content I've been promising you, because thus far I'm not sure if I've delivered that yet. If you've listened to me with any kind of regularity, you know that one of the things I always talk about, we're talking about a new year, and boy, is this year going by fast, huh? I mean, it's already the end of August, 8 months. I don't know about you, but the first 8 months have gone by very quickly, at least for me. But I always talk about when a new year comes that one of the things, or one of the ways that I look at a new year is how do we plan for that new year? You know, life will interject itself throughout the next, you know, when a new year starts. Life itself will inject itself in many ways, many times throughout the coming 365 days. So that's a given. And we have to navigate around that as it goes. And hopefully there's more good things and bad things that happen to you in a year. But the other things is, you know, so that's passive. That happens to us without much of our input. But from a proactive standpoint, I've always felt that a great way to approach a new year, rather than doing the usual and cliched, you know, New Year's resolutions, which, you know, are, and it's been said a million times, everybody makes them and they break them within the first 4 to 6 weeks, blah, 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 blah. I don't even get into that. The way that I look at it is to approach a new year, I look at it like we've got a book of life. From the day we're born, we get a book of life. The page is empty, and it's up to us to fill that page, that next year of our lives. It's up to us to fill that page with memories and experiences and things that will make that year interesting to not only live in the moment, but also to look back and appreciate. And that responsibility falls on us. As I said, the outside world will do its job on us. We all know that, right? I think we've all experienced the way life can do a, you know, can insert itself into our daily living. But aside from that, then, from an active role, what can we do to either counteract the negative or enhance the positive? And so I think we all have a responsibility, because life is such a precious thing, to make sure that every day, and especially every year, or every day, every week, every month, and then those all add up to a year, to get out there and add to that blank page. And so when that year is done in December, that page hopefully is filled with things. And you look back and you go, nice, fun. Cool. Yeah. Perhaps some negative things happen within there that were out of your control, but hopefully you offset those with some positive things that you initiated and experienced on your own. And I have found that really makes for not only a fun life in the moment, but as I said, to look back and go, all right. Oh, that was great. Oh, that was fun. That's, as I said many times, that's why I have that daily planner. I still have my paper, hardbound daily planner, and I fill in things that I have to do or I have done, or when I go in advance at the, you know, in November, I'll start to fill up my daily planner for next year based on things that are already, you know, about anniversaries, birthdays, holidays, things like that. So What I want to talk about today is one of those things that I am excited that I have been able to put onto my 2025 page. And it's something that I've always wanted to do for decades. And I am so happy and so excited that I get to finally put it down because I did it. And as I said, that's what makes it so fun. And not only was it a great experience to have it done, but at the same time, I'm going to look back at that with great memories as well. Now, I have been a fan of and a participant of Little League baseball ever since I was a little kid. I started playing Little League, I think, at 8 or 9 years old. I had a very fun and successful career in Little League and Pony League and through high school. I played baseball throughout high school. And, you know, had some great successes and experiences, winning teams, individual successes and awards and things like that. And it was very satisfying. And I look back at those years from Little League right through high school baseball and say, wow, that was just a great time. Friendships, fun, as well as, you know, that feeling of success and achievement. And I really think that that playing Little League helped, you know, in terms of dealing with life and how you go about living and stepping up to the plate, literally, and dealing with pressure situations and things like that. And so I look back at my Little League experience with great fondness and cherished memories. And because of that, over the last several decades, I have always watched with great interest the Little League World Series, which just actually finished last week. Beginning of this month, in August, they had the qualifying regional brackets and rounds. And then in the middle of the month, I believe August 13th was the first day, then the World Series started, as it has done every year, I believe, since 1947, in a small little town in kind of the northish, central north part of the state of Pennsylvania. Small little town called, actually, South Williamsport. They say Williamsport, but it's the actual complex is in South Williamsport. And that town has gained great recognition and has become a tourist attraction because of Little League baseball. It's out in the boonies. It's a beautiful, beautiful scenery there in rural Pennsylvania. I think it's about 2 or 3 hours out of Philadelphia to drive. We flew into Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, which is the capital of Pennsylvania, and then we drove about an hour and a half north from Harrisburg to Williamsport. And we also even took a little side trip one day and went to Hershey, Pennsylvania, which is about maybe half hour, 20 minutes away from Harrisburg. So we were able to do a couple of different things in a short period of time. This is only a 2-day trip. We left on a Wednesday and we came home on Friday, and we packed in a lot in those 2 days. But I've always wanted to go to Williamsport to see this in person. As I said, I've been watching the Little League World Series since the 80s. It's been on television, I think, for many more years than that. But it's only been in the last 40-some years where it's really started to take on a much more high profile in terms of awareness, in terms of broadcasting and interest. I think when it first started, I remember watching it as a little kid, in the late 70s, but I think it was on the ABC Wide World of Sports, and it probably wasn't even live. In those days, you know, Little League baseball was something that everybody played, but it wasn't considered something like a viable sport to watch. You know, the evolution of sports, and especially on television sports, on broadcast sports, in the last 40 years, it's been 180 degree difference. It really has been it's been interesting on how things that used to be hobbies are now considered sports. And not only are they considered sports, but they're broadcast with the same kind of attention and enthusiasm and high profile as the established major sports. And I think this is all due to the fact, I don't think it's any surprise when you look at the growth of that, that it coincided with the growth of cable television, which offered now more access to more channels. With more channels, there was a need for more content. I just talked about content here with this podcast. Content is king. And so while with the growth of hundreds of cable stations and now streaming stations and apps, the need for content is even more competitive and more in demand. But back in the 70s, there was a finite amount of places that would get exposure on television. There were only three networks. I know this sounds crazy to especially a younger person today to think that you just didn't have this world of choices, but there were three national networks. And yes, there were some local stations that may play that might, you know, cover some different kinds of programming with a local feel, but for the most part, everybody watched the three networks. And so there was only 24 hours in a day with three major networks. And so the battle for airtime for content was fierce. And so something like Little League Baseball, you know, that would have been way, 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 way down on the list. But as I said, as cable television started to grow, especially in the 80s, and these new channels were looking for content, and especially sports channels, which they have the whole sports world has just exploded in the last 40 years. But when you had a place like ESPN, a 24-hour sports channel, and now we've got Fox Sports and all every major sport has its own network. There's a major league this and a baseball league and a basketball station and a hockey and everything. I mean, you go to Las Vegas, you go to one of those sports book, and I mean, my gosh! And now there's all these different packages. You can watch 17 baseball games and 15 football game. I mean, at one time, it's just crazy. And to think where that's come from, where there literally was, you know, one day, you know, there was Monday Night Football was a big deal. There was Monday Night Baseball became a big deal. There was Saturday afternoon baseball. There was football on Sundays. Hockey was during the evening. Basketball in the 70s was on the rise, but it wasn't really the sport that it's become since the late 70s and early 80s, thanks to Magic Johnson and Larry Bird, and then later, of course, Michael Jordan really helped propel it into an international sport. And at that time, baseball in the late 70s and early 80s, and even into through the 80s, was still not only the national pastime, which is a nice, cozy little nostalgic word, but it was also the number one sport. Now, clearly, football has taken that over. Football is the number one sport in the world, certainly in the United States. Baseball is second. I would say basketball is third, and hockey, and then there's, you know, still soccer is trying to, have its, get its footing there. It's still having a problem. It's been, you know, the original soccer league started in the 70s with Pele, and people were telling us in 20 years soccer is going to be the number one sport in America. Well, it certainly has grown in fandom and in attention, but it's still not in the upper reaches. Football is so dominant now. A lot of the reason for that is gambling, and now most other teams are all involved in gambling, even having their own sports books, which is quite an evolution, and I put that in quotes. But back in the late 70s, mid to late 70s, early 80s, baseball was still the sport. And everybody, every kid played baseball. You know, me playing Little League baseball was not odd. I mean, that was what every little boy and now every little girl did. But certainly back in those days, it was just boys. But we played baseball all the time. I mean, we played in the summer, we played baseball all the time. At every park, you would see the diamonds, if they weren't being used in the summer by organized little league teams or league teams, then you would see pickup games with kids, big group of kids, like 18, 19 kids. All the kids in the neighborhood, we would go to the local park. And if you couldn't get on a diamond, one of the diamonds there, a lot of parks had one, a lot of times they had two or even three. And, you know, it was always first come, first serve. And there's a lot of times when you couldn't get on a diamond. You know, I remember playing, I played Little League in two different leagues. I played at a park in Chicago called Kilbourne Park and another park called Portage Park. Portage Park is a huge park on the northwest side. I don't know if it might be like a full mile around. You know, it's bounded by you know, like Irving Park and Central and Long as well. That's the boundaries there. And it's a huge park, Olympic sized pool. In fact, one of its claims to fame. I remember being a little kid. I really don't know if this is an urban legend but Mark Spitz, who was one of the greatest Olympic swimmers of all time, in 1972, he won 8 gold medals, which at the time was a record. And I remember in our neighborhood, the big talk was that Mark Spitz swam at the Portage Park pool because it was an Olympic-sized pool. And they held, apparently, from what I heard, I was a little kid, that they held some kind of Olympic trials there because it was an Olympic-sized pool and that Mark Spitz did swim there. That was his claim to fame. But as I said, Portage Park is still a major part of that neighborhood. In fact, it's even the name of the neighborhood. It's so prominent that now I'm sure if you listen to the news on a regular basis, you'll hear references to the Portage Park neighborhood. That park is so central to that that neighborhood. So it not only takes up a lot of space, but it does offer a nice recreational respite for people in the neighborhood. Lots of space, you know, playgrounds, as I said, a public pool, diamonds, you know, spaces to run and walk. They've really done a nice job of not only keeping it up, but enhancing it. I've driven past there. I don't live in that neighborhood anymore, but I often drive past there and I take a look and it's like, wow, they've really done a nice job with Portage Park. And now Portage Park area in the Chicago area has become one of the cool kind of hipster neighborhoods as the gentrification continues to move west. It started at the lake back in the 80s and moved west down Addison and Irving and Belmont and things like that, Wrigleyville, and it continues to move west. And now a lot of that is moving toward the Six Corners and Portage Park area too. But I played Little League for 1 year at Portage Park. We actually won first place in that league. But my main playing was at Kilbourne Park, which is a smaller park on the northwest side, maybe a couple of miles away from Portage. That one is still there, bounded on Addison and Kilbourne Street on the northwest side, kind of near Addison and Cicero, between Cicero and Milwaukee near Schurz High School. And the claim to fame that I had and the claim to fame that Kilbourne Park has was that this year, in 1975, 50th year anniversary, on August 8th, just earlier this month, commemorated the anniversary of when I was on the Kilbourne Park All-Star team, and we went to the Chicago Little League City Championship, and we played in Wrigley Field, and we won. and we were city champs in 1975. We beat a Southside park called Gage Park. We won 8-3, and because we were the Northside champs, we got to sit in the Cub dugout. And, you know, I was the catcher, so we got to warm up in the Cubs bullpen, which in those days, if you remember, Cub fans will know that the bullpens were just, you know, in down the left field line. You know, just two little mounds, not like today where they have all this elaborate space built, you know, underneath the bleachers. They were just two mounds on, you know, on the right field line and left field line. The Cubs was the Cubs dugout and everything was on the left field line. And so what a thrill for a lifelong, at that time, only 11 years old, you know, Cub fan to be sitting in the Cubs dugout, you know, standing on the on deck circle, you know, going into the, you know, catching the pitcher in the bullpen, running out in the field and jumping into the vines, and then in the batter's box, you know, that's the same batter's box that Babe Ruth stood there on that spot. You mean now I don't know if they've moved it because they've done renovations, but when I played there in 1975, that field had not been renovated. And so Babe Ruth stood in that batter's box. Lou Gehrig stood in that batter's box. Ernie Banks stood in that batter's box. Pete Rose stood in that batter's box. Johnny Bench stood in that batter's box. Some of the greatest players of all time stood in that batter's box. And so to have stood in that batter's box myself and then to have caught the whole game and you know crouching in that batter's box, I was in that batter's box for most of the game as the catcher. And so what a thrill. And not only to have played in Wrigley Field, because, you know, back in those days, for the public to have access to get on the field was unheard of unless you knew somebody. You know, nowadays people go on the field all the time for fundraising things and tours and you name it. Access to the field for the general public is still not widely available, but it's more available than it ever was. But back then, it was almost off limits to anyone who was not affiliated with the team. So if a chance for you know, little kids to play on that, it was such a big deal. And it was exciting, as I said, for not only us players, but our parents and everything else. And at that time, the mayor, the longtime mayor, the legendary mayor, Richard J. Daley, not Richard M., his son who was mayor, you know, a decade ago or so, but the original Mayor Daley, the one who started it all, he came to the game. He sat in the on our side, which was surprising that he sat on the Cubs side because he was a Southsider. I'm surprised that he didn't sit on the Southside side. I don't know if they, when he came in, if they knew you know what they were doing, but he was sitting on sitting on our side, and he threw out the ceremonial first pitch from the stands. He didn't go out on the mound, but from the stands he threw it out, and I, being the catcher and the Gage Park catcher, he threw a ball to each of us as a ceremonial first pitch. And then we, went back and we went to the classic brick wall there in Wrigley Field, right by the dugouts. And he signed the ball for us, which I still have, thanks to my mom, the pack rat. Oh, Mom, thank you so much. I still have the Richard J. Daley City Championship ball that he threw me. The newspapers were there because it was kind of a big deal. It was a Saturday morning at 9 o'clock. Probably not too much news going on, and the kids playing in Wrigley Field. How do you beat that for a news story? And so the newspapers came out, and in fact, there was a photo of me. It never made the papers, but the photographers took a bunch of pictures, and somehow one of the moms was able to get a bunch of the pictures, and there was a photo of me, at the wall waiting for Mayor Daley to sign the ball. So not only do I have the ball that he signed, but I have a photo of me with him as he's signing it. So It's legit, folks. So just some great, great memories. We won the game 8-3. I had a pretty good game. I think I went 1-for-2. I had a double. I think I stole a base, and I think I scored a run. I think I may have thrown out a runner at second base as well. I had a pretty good day. But nobody had as good a day as our starting pitcher. This kid's name was Tom Becker. And not only was he the winning pitcher, and he pitched a great game, and I was excited to have caught it, but at the same time, he hit 2 home runs in that game. Now, he didn't hit them into the bleachers, right? I mean, he was 11 or 12 years old. But he did hit them in the gap, and they went all the way to the wall, and he had 2 home runs. Now, you have to remember, too, this is Little League, so we were playing 60-feet bases, too. We were using the home plate, but the pitcher's mound was closer, and obviously the bases were not the 90-feet bases. But we did use the real batter's box. And so Tommy Becker, what a day he had. So just an exciting day all round. And talk about a lifetime and forever memory. And here I am 50 years later. Still, I can close my eyes and just picture a lot of what happened. It just remains such a really important and fun memory for not only my life, but also for my Little League baseball career. And so getting back to what I was saying about filling up all those empty pages that we get every year, I have wanted to go see this Little League World Series in Williamsport, which now has become a huge deal. As I said, ESPN now and ABC, they not only televise the regionals that the winning teams qualify to get to Williamsport, they show that, but as well as the entire 2-week Williamsport Little League World Series tournament as well. It's on primetime, it's on ESPN, then on the weekends they show it on ABC in the afternoons. It's become a big deal. Williamsport has now become a tourist destination because of this. It's put Williamsport on the map. They do a great job of coordinating and putting that entire event together. And so I've just been watching it not only as a baseball fan, but as a former Little Leaguer. I've just always watched it, and I've watched it grow and grow and grow in popularity and exposure. And, I mean, now these little kids, they imitate all the players. They do all the moves that baseball players do. And, you know, if they get a hit and they hit the ball and watch the homers, and they do all the little mannerisms. I mean, you name it. But they do a great job. But one thing I love about watching it is not only watching the kids play, and at the end of the day, there's some good players, but you know what? They're also like 10 and 11 and 12, and they're going to make mistakes. And so the games are sloppy sometimes, but there's also some really great players too. So it's a nice mix, and it's just fun to watch these kids that are doing it for the love of the game. And they'll cry when they lose. I mean, it's just like life in Americana right on television. One of the fun things they do too, every batter that comes up, not only do they show their statistics, their batting average and their home runs and hits and blah, 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 but then they also do for the kids, you know, like different little personal facts about each kid, like what their favorite food is, or their favorite actor is, their favorite TV show, or their favorite book, or they have a special talent. You know, one kid juggles, another kid can wiggle his ears. You know, another kid likes mortadella and mozzarella sandwiches. Another one likes tacos. Another one, you know, likes steak. You know, you name it. Another one. It seems like every 10 to 12 year old's favorite actor is Adam Sandler, without fail. Happy Gilmore, Adam Sandler. Whenever they say favorite actor, it's always Adam Sandler. So it's just a fun thing to watch from a baseball fan standpoint, of which I am. It's fun as a former Little Leaguer. It's fun to watch this and see the kids play and have a good time. And as I said, remember my days on the Little League field as well. So what I figured is this was the 50th anniversary of me playing in Wrigley Field. It's such a big milestone that I've been threatening to go to Williamsport for the last 35 years at least, as this, it has really grown in popularity. And I said, you know, what better way maybe to go than to go on this year? It was 50 years ago that I played in Wrigley, and my Little League experience, that was one of the highlights of my Little League experience. And let me go and see another highlight of the Little League experience. Let me go to Williamsport and see it in person. And so after years of threatening to go, I finally took that extra effort, and there we did. There we are. I made the plans. I had had this planned out for years. I knew exactly what to do. I knew you flew into Harrisburg. I knew it was an hour and a half away. I had all the logistics done for years. I never went the extra mile. But this year I said, you know what? We're going. My wife's not a huge baseball fan, but she enjoys watching it. We watch it together. And as I said, it worked out nice too. She's a big chocolate fan. So, obviously. And so we did that side trip to Hershey. So we got to kill two birds with one stone. And it was really a fun little trip, quick little getaway. But boy, did we pack a lot into it in those 2 days. And so we landed on opening day, the August 13th. We landed there at about 11 o'clock, rented a car, and we were in Williamsport by 1:15. And we were there to watch baseball. And as luck would have it, there was an Illinois team from Clarendon Hills, which is on the kind of the southwest side of the city in the suburbs. So we got to see Clarendon Hills play. So we actually had some skin in the game, which was nice. It wasn't just watching Little League players, but we actually had some local civic pride. Now, sadly, in the first game, Clarendon Hills lost 16-1 to Nevada. So it wasn't that fun of a game from the beginning, but it was just kind of neat to have to be rooting for somebody. And they all, the mascot was there. He's kind of a chipmunk named Dugout, and they got every food in the world that you'd expect to serve to families and 12-year-old little kids. So, of course, you had pizza, and you had chicken tenders, you had popcorn, and you had slushies. Oh, my God. The slushies were unbelievable, especially since every day there it was over 90 with the same kind of humidity that we've been having here in the Chicago area and a lot of places over across the country. You know, Pennsylvania is very close to Illinois, so they usually get a lot of our weather a day and a half or two later. And so, you know, the heat that we've been having here all this summer, which I have already termed worst summer ever. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I mean, look, I like nice weather. Don't get me wrong, but I don't like furnace weather. I mean, I don't like 95 degrees. It makes it feel like 105. I know that we have a short little window, especially here in Chicago. We get long and cold winters, I know, but I'm sorry. I can't open the door when the weather just engulfs you. It's so hot. It's just not my stuff, as I've said many times. I'm a 70 to 75 guy, and I don't even mind 65, to be honest with you. That's why I love fall so much. So this summer has been terrible as far as I'm concerned. And as I said, so we were out there outside. There's nowhere to hide, really. Boy, talk about sticky, that we were getting that same weather we've been having here out there. And even when we went to Hershey, you know, obviously Hershey, named after Milton Hershey, who founded Hershey's Chocolate. And they've got a big amusement park and a giant complex there with stores, and you go through the world of chocolate. And I mean in reality, true, it is true. Not only it's called Hershey, Pennsylvania, the streets are literally made of milk chocolate. Yeah, they really are. And so with that weather, I mean, the streets were melting. The city of Hershey was melting when we were there. It was so hot. It was so hot in Hershey that the streets were melting. No, but it was hot. But it was fun to be out there anyway. But wow, it was so cool when we got to Williamsport, pulled in, parked the car, walked up. There are signs LLWS, Little League World Series. When you walk in, there's at least two large brick posts with the Little League logo on them. And then below there were planters, like with plants. And of course they were in the shape of baseballs. Right off the bat, you go, okay, this is going to be cool. It was very similar to when I went to Cooperstown for the Baseball Hall of Fame about 2 years ago or so. The same kind of a thing. And out in the middle of nowhere, and then all of a sudden there's this small little town, and here's the Hall of Fame, and then there's a baseball field there as well, the Abner Doubleday Field. Very similar, like in the middle of nowhere, driving through this bucolic areas of trees and hills, and then boom. It's very similar as well to the Field of Dreams. That's in Dyersville, Iowa. I've been there two or three times. First time I went was before it even became a tourist attraction. I went there about a month and a half after the movie came out in 1989 because I had read a story in the Chicago Tribune that they had not torn down the field when they filmed it there. They literally built a baseball field in Iowa. And so I read a story that you could visit it. And so, oh, especially in 1989, I was still, you know, way into baseball. In fact, after going to this Field of Dreams, I was so psyched up. After seeing Field of Dreams, the film, I was so psyched up. You know, I hadn't played baseball, competitively for 5 or 6 years at that time, just a few years out of high school or so, a couple years out of college. I organized a reunion baseball game of my baseball team at high school because I was like, I got to play baseball again. That's why I still have my catcher's mitt in the trunk of my car because you never know when you get a quick game of catch, right? So going to Williamsport, they have two fields there. There's a volunteer field and then there's the Lamadi. Field as well, and he's the guy that put together this World Series kind of tournament in 1947 out in the middle of nowhere. But it was very similar. I mean, when we went to the Field of Dreams, there was nobody there. I mean, we drove up, and I went with another friend of mine and his wife and my wife. At the time, we weren't married yet; we were still going together, but we're still going out. But we got there; we had the whole field to ourselves. The owner came out and said hi to us. You know, the White House and Field of Dreams? He came out of the White House and came up to us and said, how you doing? Where are you from? And I said, Chicago. And he said, you're from Chicago? You drove from Chicago here? And I said, oh, my God, of course. Look at this place. And I think that may have helped put a little idea in his head, like, you know what? We might have something here. If we build it, they will come. We've got pictures. He invited us onto his porch. We have pictures sitting on the swing. It was unbelievable. I don't even know if you can still get that access anymore because now it's been bought and it's a whole business and everything. But my gosh, it was just unbelievable. And so that's how this was too. Walking up this ramp. You come upon the stadiums and you just go, wow, here they are. And the Lamadi, I don't know how the guy says it. That's the main diamond. And it's got a hill in the back where kids slide down. I mean, it's like a baseball amusement park. It really is. There's this big hill because it's out in rural Pennsylvania, which is very hilly and mountainous. There's a beautiful mountain hill range right behind it. There's this hill where, of course, now it's become tradition. Kids get cardboard and then they slide down the hill. Obviously, they have seats. It's just really cool. And it was everything I expected and more, and just had such a great time. And then I, like I said, having watched the qualifying rounds, I knew a lot. I knew all the teams. I knew a lot of the players. In fact, and the kids are all walking around. If they're not playing games, they're all walking around watching the other games. They have these pins that they trade. And I saw a few kids that I recognized from television and the different teams. And I went up to them and said, hey, you're blah, blah, blah. Your favorite food is tacos. You can juggle. And he looked at me like I was from outer space. He said, yeah, how did you know that? I said, saw it on television. So I had a lot of fun just, watching these kids play this whole 50th anniversary for me and remembering when I played Little League. And it was really just a really fun time. And, you know, it was something that you look back on and you go, I only wish that I had the access and the opportunities that these kids have. I mean, now, like I said, when we played, these kids, you could tell. I mean, the kids that play Little League now, I mean, they play Little League all year round. You know, they are obviously being tutored and taught by professionals or whatever they're playing year round. I mean, when we used to play sports here in the Chicago area as a little kid, we played based on the seasons. I mean, now there are, especially if you live in, and that's why a lot of Major League Baseball players especially are all from southern states or states that have nice temperate, warm weather all through the year. So a lot of southern and western states, because they could play all year round. If you played, sports here in Chicago, you were dictated by the seasons, by the weather. You know, we played baseball starting in March if it was warm enough. It wasn't raining, but certainly hopefully by April. But then by September, it started to get a little cold, and so we put our mitts and bats and balls away, and now it was football season, and we played tackle football either in leagues or, pickup games or touch football or things like that. And we played from September to November or so, or December. And then from December to March, we played, at least in my neighborhood, we played street hockey in the winter. Sometimes we'd go skating, at a park when they would freeze the park district parks. I don't even know if they used to do that anymore. They used to make ice rinks. Today, I mean, a lot of kids play in organized clubs or leagues, but that, there weren't a lot of those back then. It was expensive to play hockey, especially in our neighborhood on the northwest side of Chicago. It wasn't that. I mean, I guess kids in the suburbs might, that had a little more money would be able to play. But in the northwest side, there wasn't a lot of kids that were playing hockey. There weren't all that many rinks. There was a rink at McFedridge on the northwest side. That was about, and there was one in Franklin Park. But there weren't that many ice rinks to play, especially for little kids. So we played out in the alley. You ever watch, Wayne and Garth in the first one, Wayne's World, when they would play street hockey where they have the nets and go, car. That's what we did. We played in the alley. Car, and you move the nets. That's what we did. And then we played some basketball, and because then you play indoors from like January to March, and then you started baseball again. But now little league players, even if they're in colder areas, now there's all these indoor facilities with tutors and teachers. They play year round. And you could see the way they play. They've been taught. We were taught by our parents, and then let your natural talent take you the rest of the way. So that's a whole different dynamic as well. But when I think of the way these kids, have the access today, what we did, as I said, we didn't have, everybody, I mean, today when you see these World Series, they've got sliding gloves and batting gloves and this and that. They all have their own bats in there. But, we didn't have our own bats. You may have had a bat, maybe one, but most of the bats you had was from your team. You know, you had a mitt and you had a glove. You had a couple of bats that were hanging around your in your garage for years, but you didn't have these beautiful Easton bats that all these kids have, three or four bats of their own. No way. In my day. But anyway, it was just a very cool experience to finally go to Williamsport to experience what I did. I have to bring back one interesting thing. So, as I said, the food is also a part of this, right? Because it's basically all kiddie food. But I discovered something. So I forgot, you know, I'm in Pennsylvania, right? So there's this one stand, and they have Philly cheesesteaks, which makes sense, right? So they also had a sausage and pepper sandwich. Well, look, I love a good sausage and pepper. I love Italian sausage and green peppers. In fact, when I go and get a beef at a Johnny's or a Portillo's or wherever, I'll get a combo, which is a beef and a sausage with the sweet peppers. Oh. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go for the sausage and pepper sandwich. Well, forgetting that I'm in Pennsylvania, the sausage and pepper sandwich there comes on a long roll, similar to the kind that they make the Philly cheesesteak on. Just like they do with the Philly cheesesteak, they, you know, chop up the steak into small little pieces, and then they keep, you know, cooking it on the grill, on the flat grill with the onions and everything, and mashing it together and letting all the flavors and juices combine. Well, they do the same thing with the sausage and the pepper sandwich. Here in Chicago, if you order a sausage sandwich, a Italian sausage sandwich with peppers, if you get a sandwich with sausage and peppers on a French bread roll, dipped, you know, you get the whole sausage. You get the whole link. But there in Philly, in Pennsylvania, much like they cut up the steak, they also cut up the link into small little chunks. And then they, once again, they use the spatulas and they mix it all together. And then they lay it on the roll, the long roll. But here was the kicker, which is fine. That was fine with me. I was used to having the long link sausage as opposed to it cut up. But I'm, you know, hey, look, I roll with the changes. I'm Mr. Roll with the Punches, you know. and so I'm like, okay, fine. But then what shocked me when they handed it to me, guess what was on top of it? And it didn't make sense to me until I realized where I was. I'm in Pennsylvania, the home of the Philly cheesesteak, right? On top of the sausage and peppers, the orange cheese sauce. And I was like, wait a minute. Because from, you know, an Italian growing up with the sausage and peppers sandwich, you know, you didn't put no cheese on it. You dipped it. You got the juice, the au juice. But here, of course, they put the cheese whiz, you know, that melted cheese sauce. So at first I was kind of taken aback, like, what the heck is this? And then I realized, oh, wait a minute, I'm in Philly. This makes sense. And I got to tell you, it was good. So much so that I think the next time I get a sausage sandwich over by Portillo's or over by Johnny's, over by Elmwood Park, I'm going to get the cheese sauce. I mean, I know Portillo's has cheese sauce to dip the fries in. I'm going to get the cheese sauce, and I'm going to put it on top of my sausage and pepper sandwich. Yeah. Look at me. Crazy, I know. But I may have discovered a new taste explosion. So, yeah, I mean, it was just fun from top to bottom. Hot as heck. We were sweating our butts off. But we sat out on the hill for one game. We got that experience. We sat in the seats. We walked around the place. We went to the different stands. You know, you name it. We just ate up all the atmosphere, all the games, all the fun, all the experience that is the Little League World Series in Williamsport. And I am so excited I went to. The fact is that I think I might be going back next year. Because now I know how much fun it is. Now I'll know how to better plan things. I mean, we had a great time, but now I'd say, well, now if I did it again, I would do this and this and this and this order and blah, blah, blah. But I just really had a fun time. It wasn't an expensive trip at all, but it was fun. And I not only did I get a chance to do something I always wanted to do, but as I said, most importantly, I got a chance to put it down on my previously blank 2025 page, which I've been doing my best to fill up. And hopefully the first 8 months look pretty good so far. And I've got some plans for the next four. But if you haven't done it, you got to look at your own here now. What you do the last 8 months? You still got 4 months to go. Don't write off 2025. If there's something you want to do or something you've always wanted to do, you still have some time. If you haven't done it this year, do it. Because take it from me, when you do it, something especially that you want to do for a long time, and you finally do it, wow, it's fun, it's memorable. It's a lifetime memory. It's a great experience. And it's a sense of satisfaction to say, you know what? I made this happen. I didn't wait for it and say, oh, I wish I would have gone. No, no. I've gone. I've got the pictures. I've got the memories. And so, once again, I would urge you to follow that philosophy because it certainly served me well. But I have to say, I just had such a great time in Williamsport, and when I think back at 2025, there'll be a lot of different things I'll remember, but I will remember the day that I went to the Little League World Series. Play ball! And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast, we are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 483. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of my mind to your ears.